The following program is an abridged audio version of the streaming video talk show, A Wonderful Chaos. The hosts are Andy Chaliff and Bambos Dimitriou. The format is entirely casual, unscripted conversation. If you'd like to watch a live taping or participate with your comments in real time, subscribe to A Wonderful Chaos on YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, or Twitch.
Some people are able to say, I'm feeling happy right now, sad, angry, confused. Most people are not. Most people are just having feelings. They don't know what those feelings are. They don't take even a moment to feel them, and they have no capacity to articulate them, even to themselves, let alone to others. And once you've got that going, then from there you are equipped to play with empathy, where you're going beyond what am I feeling, you're going into what are you feeling. And what is the relationship between my feelings and your feelings?
It's a wonderful chaos. Beautifully random. Messy and glorious.
Solo or tandem.
We work to find rest. And fight to find peace. Both head and the heart.
I can let you and me.
So what are we doing here?
You mean listening to this show?
Where the more that you learn is the less that you know. Where the wounded are healed.
And the atheists pray.
It's a wonderful chaos. And we like it. It's a wonderful chaos, and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos, and we like it that way.
We're here, Bambos.
Andy, I feel it.
Definitely here.
We're talking to David Savage.
I like that you say that. You say it very French. We're talking to David Savage about being an empath, and we're going to do that on
A Wonderful Chaos.
What I like is that I've screwed up the intro so many times that when I do it right, you don't expect for it to be right anymore.
So I'm just waiting for you to fuck it up again. So guys, today we are talking on empathology.
So empath, you know, it's interesting because when I was doing the first book and I was starting to market, I was trying to find a group of people to promote. You know, you can find groups on Facebook.
Let me guess.
What?
You found a group of empaths.
Oh, not only found, there's 30 empath groups, right? So people that identify themselves as empaths. And I just taking this from David's website. An empath is someone who can feel the emotions of others. So I was born an empath. So for me, it's sort of weird not to see or think that other people can feel the emotions of others. Of course, after mom was killed by the drunk driver, like, a lot of the kind of the baggage that the filters that were there kind of dropped away. So it was much more intense and much more like I became a bit like a, what people might say, like a, someone who could see the future.
Hmm.
Like I give you an example of an empath story. So I was feeling very raw, and the more raw you allow yourself to feel, the more it's easy to let the emotions of the world around you in. Hmm. And I was in high school going out. It was a Friday night. And this guy walks in, and I see in his eyes that he has lived an intense experience. Like, I'm looking around the room like, guys, doesn't anyone else see that this guy is in a horrible state? Like, can it? And then everyone went out to have their party. It was college. Everyone wanted to go out. And I said,
did you know him?
Yeah. He was a friend. I said, and although I wanted to go out, I'm like, you can't go out. Look at this guy. And so I stayed behind. And he didn't ask for me to stay behind. It was like I intuitively knew this guy needed help and he was in a really bad state and I didn't know what it was. And then just by sitting there, like slowly, and because what you also learn when you're empathic is you don't push things. Mm-hmm. You just hold space. You allow the love to be felt and then people will come to you when they feel right and when they're comfortable. So he then shares to me that a night before, a guy jumps in front of his car wearing all black on the freeway. He basically kills the guy. And like the last thing he remembers is them pulling this man's fingers out of the grill of his car.
Wow.
And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, like, how can people not feel the emotions that are going on in another person? Because I always felt them so raw. It was always weird for me not to be with people that couldn't do that. It seemed obvious to me.
Is it because they don't feel it or is it because in that moment they're like, oh, I don't feel for?
You know, who knows? I don't know. You know, one might argue that it's there in everyone, and then we build up filters and we build up structures that make it so that we can protect ourselves against it. Some might say there's a predisposition. We'd be more likely to be more able, willing, capable, like a skill that's kind of more inbred from our DNA. Mm. Like I'm not going to say fight that battle. But one thing I certainly saw was that was something that defined me. I didn't know how to deal with it until I got much older. And then I just made a lot living from it, because that's what we're going to talk to David about, is how do you transfer this? And that's all I do now. I just use my empathy and then go into really weird, contorted situations and then allow it to facilitate people through that. Not with an intention of, guys, this is the structure we're going to use, but more like, I see you. This is what's really going on. I'm going to tell you what's going on. You're not going to resist me, because you're going to feel there's only love behind what I'm saying. And then things settle really quickly. And this is what David does for a living. So that's really cool.
What is the difference between emotional intelligence and empathy?
Oh, emotional intelligence and empathy. Well, I would almost say one can't have emotional intelligence without empathy.
Okay.
But that'd be a great question for David. I'd love to hear what he'd have to say to it. Because the only way you become intelligent is if it's a logical intelligence, then it really isn't intelligent. It's more like idea of what it'd be like studying psychology or understanding how humans work. And if you understand psychology, you may not ever really know what's going on when you're interacting with a person. But if you are really in tune with your own pain and you feel that pain from another person, like, oh, shit, I know that pain because I know it in myself. And when you interact with someone while you're feeling the same pain, people feel a deep connection that they otherwise wouldn't feel. Gotcha. And that's what David does. He does this for a living. And that's since I deal with so many businesses, I do it under the current, but he really promotes himself as an empath, which I think is really beautiful. He says, this is what I am and this is what I do. There's a school for empaths. Of course, one thing about being an empath we'll discuss, I'm sure, is that there's a high load on your system, because the more you let in, you also need to be able to regulate. So how do you deal with the, I'm fully feeling all the emotions of other, but those aren't my emotions. And I think we've had that discussion as well a few times.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's really cool.
Should we bring him on?
Let's bring him on.
Hello.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. That was such a knowledgeable and thoughtful introduction to empaths and empathy. You know what you're talking about. It's really nice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wrote a big script ahead, so I didn't really make that up. I I actually printed out your website here because I liked your first quote. You know, big bold letters. You know, David Savage has the ability to feel what's happening within you and give you insight of how the process of what you're going through.
Well, I'd like to go straight to my curiosity, and that would be how do you see the difference or the commonality of empathy and emotional intelligence?
I would say empathy is a form of emotional intelligence. Mm. Other forms of emotional intelligence could be emotional self-regulation, emotional self-awareness. I could probably think of some more. For instance, emotional self-awareness is to me the foundation of it all, and more important than empathy. So some people are able to say, I'm feeling happy right now, sad, angry, confused. Most people are not. Most people are just having feelings. They don't know what those feelings are. They don't take even a moment to feel them. And they have no capacity to articulate them, even to themselves, let alone to others. And that's the foundation of emotional intelligence. And once you've got that going, then from there, you are equipped to play with empathy, where you're going beyond what am I feeling? You're going into what are you feeling? And what is the relationship between my feelings and your feelings?
Thank you.
What did you take away from that, Bambos?
I couldn't grasp it, actually.
Really?
I could see that.
Yeah.
Let me try again. Emotional intelligence is knowing stuff in a real way about feelings generally.
Mm.
Does that make sense, Bumbos?
Yeah.
So do you get, understand, grasp, feel feelings? Is that a domain you have mastery over? That's emotional intelligence. Empathy is understanding other people's emotions in particular. It's an area of emotional intelligence. Did you follow?
Yeah. So tuning into others.
Yes.
And feeling what they're feeling, actually.
Yes. Or at least understanding what they're feeling.
So just to go a little bit deeper. So if you are having someone, because like I'm talking from my own experience, if I've been in a situation where someone is having an experience, which, and I feel it also in my own body, I've had trouble getting it out of my system to the point that I have to go to a park and purge. And I'm wondering how is it for you when you're I don't even know what the exchange is when you're feeling them. How do you let it move through you?
You're asking an advanced question in a simple way. The answer is it depends on what it is. So the most important thing to know about being an empath is your own capacity or your own ability to process other people's emotions. So you put yourself, as we all do, as I do too, in a situation where you couldn't handle what was coming at you or it was overwhelming. So I try not to do that. So I'm aware of how much I can hold. It's like the same way a weightlifter wants to know what their ability, how much weight they can hold, and they don't want to carry, they don't want to take on more than they can carry because that will hurt their muscles. So empaths want to get good at understanding their capacity. And then the other thing to know is that different emotions in others bring up different things in us. So if you have a problem with anger, for instance, and you're facing someone who has a lot of anger, that's going to be really hard for you. Mm. So you want to become aware of what emotions you're good with and what emotions you're not good with. And then the last part to say about this, actually I could talk for hours about this, but the last part I'll say right now in answer to your very deep question is that processing other people's emotions starts to become a lot like processing your own. So what do you do if you're overwhelmed with an emotion just because you're overwhelmed? Well, you want to get in touch with that feeling, whether it's yours or another's and it's in you, and then be with it. And the more you can be with it and the more you can give yourself what you need in feeling that feeling, the more that feeling, if it's a negative one, will naturally dissipate.
Mm.
And throwing up can be good too.
Yeah, I'm letting this land a bit. My context was I gave a workshop, and I thought it was going to be an easy workshop, by the way. It was the theme of our ability to say no, where in our life we haven't said no. And I was really holding space for 30 people. Half the room was running out of the room. So I had to really bring everyone back in and just say, guys, stay with me. But having all these people.
But also give a little bit of context of the exercise. They had to look at each other in the face and scream no.
Oh.
Thank you.
Oh my God. So you're asking for it.
So let's just say I was really surprised that there were so many people in the space that, and I could feel the choked feeling here. And I couldn't shake it off. I really felt that I was beaten up inside.
Yeah, well, I applaud the exercise. It's a powerful one, but you were biting off a lot.
Yeah, apparently I was.
And so many deep traumas come either from our inability to say no, or our inability to say no results from trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So by asking people to say no fully, you're asking them to dredge up intense trauma, and then you're saying I have an obligation to hold this. That's you're like a weightlifter who took on you know, more than your muscles could handle. I couldn't handle that. I would not hold a workshop where I told a bunch of people that I didn't know to say no.
No, no, they know each other really well.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, then it's a little bit.
Yeah. But still, that's why the context was important for you to know, because I think that would help them understand why it was such a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I even feel it now. Like I don't think I'm feeling their stuff. I think I'm feeling what it would be like to hold that space. Oh.
Yeah. Hmm. I want to segue to something.
And you were going to say that. Segue away, Andy, Shayla.
No, no, we'll go back. But Bambos and I like to talk about things we discuss independently of the guests that are on. And this isn't necessarily connected to empaths, but it's more of a discussion between us that you get to be part of. So Bambos and I had a discussion around how he goes about learning. Sometimes when someone describes something to him that's conceptual, he'll have a hard time making sense of it because he can't necessarily feel it and like where does it connect to his experience. And it was really interesting just a moment ago when he said, I didn't really get the first explanation that you gave. But if you ask the other, like, hey, help me understand because I didn't necessarily land, that's where that other individual will either show their expertise or not. Because if they need a framework to explain it in the only way they can, then there's not a lot of ability to adapt to what's in front of them. So this was a really nice example of what we had just discussed, I don't know, maybe a day ago.
There you go, yeah. Yesterday. Yeah.
Yesterday.
Oh, that's yeah. Cool.
Yeah, because I think what happens is sometimes we take for granted that when someone's sharing something with us, the fact we don't understand it says something about us, where all it does is it's a way they've decided to explain it, and it worked for some and not for others. So their inability to be empathic actually would make it less likely that they could adapt to another person because they wouldn't understand, oh, this person processes emotions in a different way, and therefore this is an easier way to communicate. Yeah.
Yes. I'm so used to explaining empathy to people who are completely cerebral.
Yeah.
So I'm talking to the head. I'm not a cerebral person, but I'm smart and articulate, which is fortunate. So I can speak to people who need to understand things conceptually.
Yeah.
But that's not my native language.
Yeah, I find that important when I work, because I'll work with a lot of, using all empath tools, but never necessarily discussing them as empath tools. And what I find really funny is that a lot of the people I work with will be CEOs, high level executives, you know, people even, you know, well known. And they are so smart that they think they can outsmart emotions, which I love, because then they get into this intellectual masturbation of the fact that I can explain emotions on such a clear level, even getting into biochemistry, neural pathways, all the shit that they throw out at you. And yet they'll totally not see what's right in front of them, which is the most important thing, is they're fucking up all their relationships. So you're like, hey, all of that may be true. I'll give it to you. But how does that, like, let's think about all the 10 relationships that aren't working in your life right now. What's the commonality in all those?
Wow. You have a lot of patience there.
Yeah, I don't find that. See, I find like that isn't a patience for me. I find, funnily enough, the patience of going into like a mindfulness course or like taking young minds that are just starting to distinguish between a thought and the thought being independent of the thought, like that for me is patience. Because in some ways it's like, wow, now I need to like not be in this, like, because like, when you move into more mastery, then the joy sort of comes from being challenged in environments that aren't as easy. How do I navigate two people shouting at each other and find a way to make it so that they start to love and hug each other? By like that's
sort I like of feel, that.
That feels oh. good.
That feels good to me too. I really like that. What I find occasionally tedious when I run up against the belief common in men who are in positions of power that their understanding of things is enough.
Oh yeah.
That I find a little tedious. It's like this disdain for emotional truth and authenticity because it doesn't fit their pre-existing boxes. And I'm angry at the culture at large for propping up these dissociated and sociopathic men into positions of power. And so when I encounter them with their belief that because they get it, somehow that's enough, that anger at society at large turns into disdain or impatience sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Bombos, that was emotional intelligence, but that was not empathy. In fact, there was no empathy in what I just said because I had no empathy for what those people are actually feeling, which is a lot of fear. What?
I hear separation.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of, if I can tune into them, what they're actually feeling is fear. And I can have empathy for that. I can be with them in their fear, but I'm so angry at the culture that allows that fear, which is masquerading as mastery, to run our show that I lose my empathy in it.
I tend to be like an alpha male in those situations, but an empathetic alpha male.
I hear that. That's cool.
So like not let them like, hey, you can do whatever you want, but let's agree you're fucking things up. And I can point out 5 instances where that's the case. So I don't have a dog in this fight because I'll leave today. But the truth be told is that isn't going to change when I leave. And then I just go because there's no attachment to an outcome. There's just, hey, I'm not going to pretend what I've seen. And if you don't have any desire to look, why would I even try to push you any further? It's a no-win battle, right? And I think more times than not, I've just, the people you've described, I probably wouldn't even be in the same room with them because there wouldn't be any reason for me to be there to begin with. So I don't even know if I would be interacting with the people you described. The typical strong-minded individual who basically sees that emotions get in the way of results. Actually.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's the underlying belief. Yeah.
Yeah. So sad. How did your journey, I discussed a little bit with me, you know, and on our shows, I'll discuss, you know, always having a little bit more prone to feeling people's emotions around me. And then after my mom was killed by a drunk driver, sort of the bottom dropped out. I just could see everything. That was sort of my journey up to like 18. And then a lot of years of just pushing it away because it didn't feel very good to feel others' emotions. So I did things to just, I told jokes most of the time because it was a way of, I could acknowledge what I was seeing without having to be vulnerable. So in like your journey, how did you see it evolve? When did you first realize that maybe you were picking up on things others weren't? And then how did it like kind of, how did it become more of a skill like it is now for you?
I was always good at understanding what people were going through on a conceptual level. I had a reputation as the person you could come to and ask, what's he thinking? What's he feeling? What's going on with them? But I wasn't feeling it, or I didn't know that I was feeling it because I was so blocked and clogged emotionally. So me until the age of 30, I didn't have any much access to my own emotional body. I was mostly depressed, very heavy, but what I think was happening was that my body was processing other people's emotions, but because I was so disconnected from my own, I wasn't sensing it. And then it would feed up the answers in thought bubbles. The bottom that dropped out for me was less tragic, but really excruciatingly painful for me nonetheless, was my film career fell apart. I had been trying to make documentaries, and I had this dream documentary, and I thought I put all the pieces together, and I raised the money and gotten a network to say yes, and it was really exciting. And then that project fell apart, as so many things do, and I felt completely adrift and lost. And that was the first time I started asking the question, what's really going on inside? Like, what is actually happening here? I should not be wanting to kill myself over the falling apart of a film project. There's something deeper than Hollywood failure. And then that led me to everything. Months in nature, lots of plant medicine, lots of psychedelics, lots of journaling, lots of meditating, and lots of releasing the emotions of others. So it turned out that my depression was largely the result of me holding in my body other people's pain. I was like a pipe that had been clogged, and I had to get that pipe clean in order to even reconnect with my own self. And through cleaning that pipe, I discovered that, oh, wow, like, this isn't even mine. This isn't mine. This isn't mine. This isn't. Whoa, what's going on here?
more isn't mine than is mine. That process happened relatively quickly on the scale of a life. And I discovered that I was super sensitive to the emotions of people around me. And now it wasn't conceptual. I was having visceral experiences all the time. And for some reason, the other part of my path was play. And one of the ways I wanted to play was to do psychic readings and intuitive readings. So I started to use this gift to have a lot of fun. And I found myself in front of audiences. I'm in front of an audience. I invite somebody from the audience to join me. I close my eyes. I take their hands. I feel what it is they're feeling. And then I express their feelings back to them in front of an audience. Just felt inspired to do that. And then that has been a blast. I don't do it as much anymore, but that's, I guess, the answer to your question. That's how I got here.
And that was the word earlier when we were talking in the intro that I couldn't find was psychic.
Oh, yeah.
And that was funny because what I've noticed is that one would perceive highly empathic people who are capable of articulating what they're experiencing, because some people just feel it but can't necessarily articulate it, that they would appear to be psychics. Because on one level, how could you know that?
Mm-hmm.
And what I've often found funny is that when I do my work and I go into a business, like I'll also feel the dynamic and I'll say, oh, I know what's going to happen here. This is going to probably play out for 2 months. And then that person's going to leave. So you got to deal with it now. And like, I remember one guy in a business, you know, it was a high-end fashion company in New York. And he's like, Andy, like, how can you know that? Right. Like, come on. And then it just happened. And then another thing happened. And then like later on, he said to me, Andy, I kind of thought you were crazy when you first would tell me this stuff. How do you figure it out? And I said to him, like, how do you not see it? That's how I look at life. It's so damn obvious. Like, I don't understand how you can't not see it.
Hmm. I totally relate to that. I do that too. And I also do corporate work. And I also have had that same experience. But I don't shy away from the word psychic. I think it is a form of psychic ability. We don't know the mechanism by which emotions are transmitted from one person to another. There's a subtle awareness there that science has not remotely touched. And I don't know if you go as far as I do with this, but I am capable not just of feeling the feelings of people who are around me, but I am capable of tuning into people's emotions across distances. So if I'm tuned into somebody, I can feel what they're feeling now, whether or not they're physically present. And I'm capable of tuning into people's emotions across time, how they were feeling and how they're going to feel. And the line between empathy and psychic abilities is just, I mean, I'll hold that line in order to explain myself to people who think this kind of stuff is BS, just to fit into their, you know, the cultural box of acceptable. But on a personal level and in my nervous system, that line doesn't exist. So what you're doing is psychic, as far as I'm concerned.
On one level, as you described, I'm like, yeah, I can feel that. And yet I still wouldn't call it psychic.
Okay.
Maybe not to the degree that you've necessarily tuned it, but like I'll say, oh, I know what's going on right now. And maybe it's just a very subtle thing. It could just be like, it could be that the regularity with which I speak to them and now they have, so there might be less obvious clues, or it might just be something just doesn't feel right. And then the call, of course, you know?
Yeah. That's psychic.
Yeah. I guess I don't shun it. Let's put it that way. I just don't necessarily elevate it. I call it a high degree of
channeling.
Yeah. I use the word channeling a lot. Yeah.
Okay. I like that. I'll call it channeling too.
Other moments where you are going through shit yourself, and to what degree does that prevent you from fully connecting to other people?
There are many moments I'm going through shit myself, and it often prevents me from connecting with other people. Sometimes when I'm going through shit, I can hold my shit and put it over here and connect with that person. Sometimes I'm going through shit and I try to put it over here, but whatever that person is going through triggers that shit. And so, and so then the only thing I can do is either to withdraw and say, I can't be in this with you because I'm going through my own stuff. Or depending on our relationship, integrate the shit I'm going through into it. Maybe we need to be going through all this shit together. So I'm going through X with my girlfriends, and then somebody wants me to hold space for them, and then they're going through X with their girlfriends. Oh, that's bringing up all my stuff. Okay, well, this is bringing in my stuff, and you have your stuff, and maybe we're meant to be in this soup of girlfriend stuff together. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes when I feel really clear, like now I feel really clear, but there are still unhealed wounds flitting around my unconscious. And if you happen to step on one accidentally, or maybe in your case, bambos, because you're looking for it, that will inhibit my ability to hold space. Even if I'm feeling good, something can come up at any moment. I think the mastery is not in always being able to hold space for another. That is too high a bar, I think, for anyone. The mastery is in knowing your capacity moment to moment and being honest with yourself and with others about it.
Showing your humanity.
But let's agree on one thing, is that you could be off your game and 30% of what you do is going to be satisfactory for 80% of the people you're going to be interacting with.
Yes.
Is that your experience?
Yeah.
The level of emotional intelligence out there in the world is so low.
Yes.
That literally just saying, like, how are you feeling? And having the person give an answer that is inauthentic and then saying, that doesn't feel like how you're really feeling. Can we get to what's really going on? Is enough to change dynamics.
This is my point.
Yes.
So you basically, I mean, not that you're not in your full power, of course, but I would almost think to myself, you don't really need to be in your full power to deal with probably 80% of the situations you'd be encountering.
I guess what I like to do, and maybe Bambos too, is I like to put myself in situations where I will be forced to be in my full power. So I do fewer and fewer one-on-one sessions because I feel like I can just be at 30% and it's fine. And I do more and more teaching and workshops and performance art, because if I'm going to be feeling somebody's feelings in front of an audience and speaking to their experience with authority and compassion, I need to be at 90% at least.
Yeah.
So I like that tightrope.
That's nice. Yeah.
Or like this week, I teach classes online every Thursday. And this week I'm teaching about money and how to have a healthy relationship with money. And money is a dicey subject for me. It still brings up a lot. And so I'm putting myself in a situation where I have to show up vulnerably and authentically and thoughtfully all at once. I can't just phone it in. And I like that.
Nah, that's beautiful.
Andy always says it's money and sex.
Yeah, those are the two hangups. Bola Long is our dear viewer from South Africa who always makes sure to give us something to put on the
screen
and talk about. Are there people without emotions? Is it not people with an ability to ignore how they feel, but they are still feeling it? Are there not people with an ability to ignore how they feel, but they're still feeling it?
It's called Netflix.
I'm going to answer the second question first. Are there people without emotions? No. In my opinion, there are no people without emotions. That's my gut rising up. There are many people, most people, maybe even bordering on all people, are feeling emotions that they are not actually feeling. In other words, there's a split in the nervous system where one part of the nervous system is having an emotional reaction and another part of the nervous system is disconnected from that reaction.
Mm.
And most of us spend most of our time in a disconnected state, not having the emotional experience that our poor little inner child or the walled off part of our nervous system is having. I would go so far as to say even sociopaths who have a limited range of emotion, they still feel certain emotions for sure. Sociopaths have access, for instance, to excitement. They have access to determination. They have access to feelings of dominance. So those are emotions that sociopaths are having. But I also think they have, they don't have access, but they do have deep down in there feelings of shame and insecurity and fear, but that it's so walled off they can't access it anymore.
Hmm. I had to think of our friend who has a bit of an autism, mm-hmm. and he always says he can't feel, you can't trigger him. But then there'll be moments where he'll swing to sexual, the sexual spectrum, or he'll go into anger or extreme love. And there's nothing in between. It's always an extremity.
Yeah. So his system is blocked, 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 and then it can't hold it anymore and it explodes.
Yeah.
So what he says he can't feel emotions. What he really means is he's lost access to gradations.
Mm-hmm. Can you give another word for gradations? I don't know it.
Subtlety, gray.
To little pieces of it. It has to be really exaggerated, so not little pieces of it.
Yeah.
So I can feel a little sad, medium sad. I can give you my level of sadness on a scale of 1 to 100. And this person could probably give you 0 or 100.
Hmm.
Can we talk about the fact that I wrote a book?
Is this the book that was the 7 years of Facebook posts?
Yes.
So just as a preamble to this, I thought this was such a cool thing. This alone was worth having a talk with David. David basically took 7 years of Facebook posts and put it into a book. How genius is that? Think about how many people talk about doing a book or creating something and they don't. David says, hey, I've got seven years of great posts. Let's make a book out of this.
Well,
congratulations. I thought
you don't seem as impressed as Andy wants you to be.
I noticed that.
Yeah. I don't have a reference for book writing, so I would have to look at your post to get an idea of if it excites me or not.
Regardless, David.
Tell us about your book.
Yes, Bombos, you ought to be impressed.
I'm sorry. So
yeah, that is a violation of one of the...
You have 18 minutes to wow me.
What I just did is a violation of one of the key rules of emotional intelligence that if I were in charge of the world, I would make sure everyone learned, which is there is no emotion you should or should not feel. Whatever you're feeling is welcome at the party. So when I say you should be impressed,
I got the sarcasm. And I love it. Thank you.
Okay, good. So I have been writing weird, funny, thoughtful, vulnerable, intense posts on Facebook for 7 years. And my friend Rachel was a big fan of them. And she said, you should collect them into something. They're something. Mm. And felt right. So I kept following the flow. And I sent them to my friend Faye, who's an editor. And she's like, there's a book here. And so Faye and I started working on it. And then it turned into a book. It formed itself. And it's coherent. Like you don't notice while you're reading it that it's Facebook posts. First of all, it's formatted in a nice, pretty way. And it has an arc, and it also holds alone as a bunch of short teachings, I guess you could call it, or meditations or thoughts or little personal essays.
Mm. What is the book called?
Healing Heals the Healer 2.
When he says that to you, Bombas, what's going on? What's your next question?
Oh, it sounds a bit like your book.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It makes sense.
Oh, you remind me of your book type, your latest book?
The Wounded Healer.
Healer. Let's jam on Wounded Healers then, or this overlap between our
I mean, I didn't see any real difference in how we're kind of engaging the world outside of positioning. You know, when I saw...
You're probably making more money.
Probably, because I just focused in on the easiest group, you know, just like... They value me. I value them. It's pretty easy. It's mutual. And
Yeah, I'm corporate enough, but you really fit. Like, they look at me and they're like, hey, I think we can let him in. So they look at you, they're like, oh, he's one of us.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I got to cut my hair a certain way. I can only wear certain shirts.
Yeah.
And you fit the mold. But what I think...
Andy, you've walked into meetings with tennis shoes.
What do you mean I do? I mean, I've taken my pants off in the middle of a business meeting because I was so sick of people using the word professional as a means of shutting down. I'm like, fuck this. This is professional. If you need to do this so that you succeed, that's professional. Stop the bullshit.
Yeah, I like it.
But the point is sort of a little different with, like, when I hear you doing that, and this is the reason why I want to go back to it a little bit, is that I think it's great that you just acted and let flow guide you, because that's how I work as well. If anyone talks how the book emerged, I did a voice recording of a trip I took through the US. I transcribed it. I read it. I'm like, oh, this actually could work. And then I edited that. And then I had a friend come and help support. And then his friend like you. And I think in a way, a lot of people, they don't understand that the world will guide you if you allow it to sort of point you in the right direction. And when it doesn't guide you, allowing that spaciousness to sort of find another rhythm is also mm-hmm. part of that process. And I guess what I saw in you was very much that what I would call the surrender to process. And that's just a beautiful thing. I think when people live in surrender to process, things happen much more naturally. And it's sustainable because you're not fighting against one thing to make it work to the point where you're so exhausted it just can't continue anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you and I are in sync in our worldviews. I don't know how to do it any other way at this point. The amount of resistance that comes up in me when I try to resist is unbearable.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not so much, I mean, conceptually, it sounds like we both have this semi-Taoist worldview that there is an organic flow to things, and our mission as humans, should we choose to accept it, is to allow that flow to come through us.
Yeah.
And then our identity is not so much who we think we are, but whatever emerges through our surrender to that larger flow, which is how nature operates and the cosmos. And if there is a God, how else would he or she do it? So we are united in that, and that's cool.
I would never. So as you were describing stuff, because you were making definitions as Boundless was started, it was like interesting, because every time you would define it, you would define with more nuances than I use. Like, because in my mind is like, there's enough distinction in this that that I can explain any situation that emerges. Is that too abstract, or is that
too abstract?
Okay. You said, for instance, earlier in the conversation, you know, weightlifting, you said you can only hold the weight of whatever you can manage, right? And in any given situation. In my mind, it's like, well, if I haven't made peace with that shit in myself, how the hell can I make peace with somebody else? Like, that's my phrasing of it. And there might be a limited in terms of the nuances in that, but that would be the simpler, in my mind, simpler way. Because you'll go even further description, which is great, by the way. I was thinking, wow, these are really nice descriptors that I never use. But I'll just be like, hey, how much space can you make in yourself? That's about as much space as you can make for somebody else. You know,
you've honed your communications by talking to people with seemingly less capacity or less sophistication around these issues than I have.
Oh, yeah.
And I respect that. It's hard for me to say something where the counter argument to what I'm saying doesn't appear, and then I have to go there. So what you're saying is true, mostly. How can I deal with shit in you that I haven't dealt with in myself? That's true, asterisk, unless I have a healthy process for holding myself when I can't deal with shit. Then I can bring my shit into the dynamic with you if I can acknowledge that it is my shit. That's true, but that's way too far for most people, but I can't help myself.
I would even say, in total agreement with everything you've said, I'd put that asterisk there and say what I said earlier is totally bullshit.
Oh, because you're too hard on yourself then.
Because you're right. Actually, I don't even need to be connected. I can just simply follow a rote questions. I can give you 5 questions to coach anybody. And as long as you don't bleed any too much of your own belief system into it, you won't corrupt the message so that the person might be able to reflect. Like, you could go that far, of course. But yeah. I mean, I guess the one thing I see is I use the crassness, I'd almost say, compared to how you are, knowing that it's always bullshit. Like, I'm never not saying something that's overly simplified, that's trying to make a point without necessarily negating five other things that are also true. So in some ways, I understand completely where you're going. And I guess since I feel comfortable navigating that, I'm also comfortable with the crassness.
I think you're orienting, we're both orienting around our hearts, but you're orienting even more than I am around your heart. So your heart is guiding and you're like, man, if it doesn't lock click up here, that's fine because my heart's in charge and that'll work. And I have a mechanism here that does not allow me to go forward unless it checks out here and here and here. And then, here.
Yeah. And then I say, I can't do it. That would be the channeling word I use, unless I feel clean. Because if I don't feel clean, I can't trust what's going to come up, because a heart isn't like, as I get older, I'm like, oh, I just see everything through the filter of love. And when I speak it, it just makes sense. But if love isn't existing, then there's that filter is now, it's like the shield has dirt on it. And then you can't really see things that clearly, right?
Well, yeah. I completely respect your way of doing things. And I'm personally attached to getting it right. Like, I feel the attachment to getting it right lives in my nervous system. So I want to be precise. But in my overall understanding of the way the world works, that isn't true. You don't have to get it right. You have to get it connected. And if it connects, that's more important than being right.
Yeah, yeah, true. But like, let's go to back to in defense of you, right?
Okay.
You said, Andy, I want to be in front of groups.
Yeah.
And I want to, so I feel very vulnerable in that space I was just talking from.
Yes.
So I also don't love going in front of groups of 30 or 40 people, because if someone doesn't want to see your intention, which I see immediately, then I'm like, why do I even want to engage you? But if you put, as you put yourself in very complex situations, because what I know of coaching is if you're coaching one person in a group of 30, you're actually coaching 29 people who are reacting to how you coach that one person.
Absolutely.
So what you're doing in your world is you're like, I'm allowing myself to engage in a mental, or whatever the state we want to call it, more thoughtful manner. Cerebral, I don't know, that I don't want to use any word that make in any way might be pejorative, but the whole idea is that in doing it, that you create a space which allows you to do it with more people in a way that's responsible.
Yes.
And that's the beauty of recognizing how skills get honed in order to service whatever it is that they're interacting with, which I think is great. I mean, I don't like doing groups. I'll do groups, you know, I don't know. I did it this tour through the U.S. where I sat with 60 groups of people and asked them to write letters to loved ones as if it was the last letter they were going to write them. So I didn't know these people at all. I met them and we go into the most intense experience probably they had in a long time in their lives. And I cried each one of those sessions because I didn't facilitate the session. I was an example of the thing I was inviting them is to stand in their full vulnerability when writing someone that they cared about. And what I saw was that really took the life out of me. So I thought by being emotional, the emotions would pass through me. I ground myself again and I feel like, wow, that was such a release. But what it really turned into, it was like, I sucked the life out of myself. So even doing one of those sessions now feels like the weight of the world's on my shoulders. Like, I can feel tears come up because it's like, wow, that's heavy. Like I would say the hardest one for me to obviously have compassion for is myself. So to like embrace how hard it actually was is hard. And to say you probably did more than you were able to have taken responsibility for, and it's okay, you know?
Yeah. You did a really good job of showing compassion for yourself there.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
But that would be the harder thing I have, because it's easier to feel the pain of others in me, and it's always been that way, than my own pain. So that's
it. Seems like you've gotten a lot better at it. I see someone who can be with their pain now.
Yeah, it's better, but it's like, it's better. It's accessible, but it isn't, it's not like the default. So it would be the, and maybe you're actually, as I hear myself speak, it wouldn't be the, is when it comes up, do I resist it? The answer is no. So yeah, I'm better at it. I forget that you don't always feel this way. It's just when the feelings come up, can you give yourself that self-love? And that isn't as much of a challenge as it has been. But like praise would be hard. Someone praises me for something that's still hard just to accept.
Or thank you.
Just fully accept, let it in completely. Yeah.
I don't know. That sounds a bit like an old story when you say it. I feel
no, it's true. It's true.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. It's like a, let me go to the pain. It would be like, I would have to accept how much I'm loved. And that isn't easy.
I hear that. I think you and I would be a very interesting tag team. I don't know what that would be like, but whatever third person, they would have very few places to hide.
Yeah. Beautiful. Nice being with you.
It's nice being with you guys. Bombos, I don't know if you ever made me feel too uncomfortable. We were discussing before that it would be nice if Bombos could find some spot in me I couldn't deal with, and that would be interesting.
I didn't have that as an intention.
I just had that as a hope.
What's the most uncomfortable sexual situation you've ever been in?
Sexual?
Yeah.
The most uncomfortable sexual situation I've ever been in.
He's pointing at me.
Oh, he's
actually, that wouldn't be the question I was asking.
That wouldn't be? Okay, then ask the question.
What's your relationship with your penis?
Oh, nice.
Easeful. And I feel really good about it. And I listen to it when it wants to speak. And pretty low charge and even some affection. But that was a good approach.
I'm still with when you said I can't always receive love.
Yeah.
And I kind of stayed there because when I just had this, like also recently when I shared, he was sick last weekend and I spent the day Saturday like, fuck, it could be COVID, and the idea of losing him, it really, I felt it. And when I shared that with him, he was like, I don't know why you guys are like this. It's like, I'm at peace with dying. And it kind of, I now recognize that he kind of brushed away the love that I was having in that moment. But it didn't make it any less like, and maybe it's selfish of me. It's probably selfish, but the idea of losing him will make this world pretty lonely.
I don't experience that as selfish. I experience that as beautiful and heartfelt.
So yeah, you're loved.
We've got a group, by the way, that emerged from the book called And It's Fucking Great, where people post the things that are hardest for them to accept or love in themselves.
Oh.
And then And It's Fucking Great is the hashtag that follows it.
Awesome.
I'm laughing because this could be another book then. Take all the posts.
Yeah, exactly. And the beauty of the page is that no one is there to heal anyone else. No one is there to fix anyone. And, you know, and when someone does try to fix, then you've got everyone else in the group feeling triggered by it. And then they'll say, I'm triggered by the response to this post and it's fucking great. So there's just the ownership of the experience, whatever that experience is.
Well, that's really nice.
Yeah.
That brought up the question to me immediately of what is it in myself that I find it hardest to accept or love about myself?
Hmm.
This feels like a vulnerable spot for me. So we got to somewhere, just I find it hard. Oh, even to say it is like, oh, so this is alive. Unlike my relationship to my penis, I find it really hard to accept the extent of my ambition. I judge myself for my ambition. I don't like that. I don't like what I want. I want to want less.
Mm.
So, and it's fucking great. No, I'm not even there yet. I can't own that. It's not great yet.
It's fucking great that it's not fucking great.
Yeah, that's
what you can do. I can go there. It's fucking great that it's not fucking great.
Yeah.
I'm at that level.
Yeah. That only emerged because the group, because when you wrote stuff that you couldn't say was great, you'd have to qualify that as being great.
No, it's a beautiful lesson of self-acceptance. If you can't accept it, can you accept that you can't accept it? And at least then you brought acceptance to yourself.
Yeah. Really beautiful. Yeah. Anything coming up for you?
I was curious about your money workshop, but I just came out of one. And I actually took a time out last week to kind of process finances, spendings. Like normally when there's a, I had a moment of, oh fuck, I need to network and email people and push it and post and create content. And I didn't do shit last week. And every day the idea of not doing anything was really resistance.
Mm.
But I just took every day to kind of connect to what was the deeper need and the pain and the beliefs and the layers surrounding finances. Because I knew if I would take action from that fear that chill up my spine, it wouldn't be clean, whatever I would be doing. So I think yesterday I had inspiration. Last week I didn't have space for creativity. It would have been like a repetition of old stuff.
Mm.
That sounds really wise and deep and probably similar to what will come up in this money workshop. What I'm wanting in the workshop is to help people, including myself, arrive at a place where money doesn't feel so charged, where we can have the same relationship with money that we have with a friend we get along with and can communicate in a healthy way to. That's my intention for myself and for the group. And everyone has different charges around money. For me, it's been a lot of shame around not having enough and a lot of even tending towards self-loathing for not doing enough to get it.
Hmm.
So in order to heal my relationship with money, I need to work through those wounds that have attached themselves to money. And then there's a universal wound that we've all have with money, which is the intertwining in our unconscious of money and survival, which is a myth. We all believe that we need money to survive. And so money comes charged with, I need this to survive, but we don't need money to survive. We need food, water, shelter, healthcare, family, community, and a sense of purpose. That's what we really need to survive and thrive.
Mm.
And if we can see that those are the true needs, then we can start working to meet those needs And money will show up in service of meeting those needs, because the flow of the universe wants us to have our deepest needs met. But when we come back to the idea, I need money too, and it's not really completely true, we're living in that lie, then we are disconnecting from the true needs we are hoping money will help us to meet. And we're on that treadmill that so many of us get stuck in our entire lives. Oh, there's my little money stuff. My preamble.
I do a lot of money workshops, so we can have a discussion of that offline if you want some other tools that I've got in my toolkit.
Huh. Yeah. In theory, yes. In practice, not yet.
Good. I'm around.
You're great. You guys are both so sweet and heartfelt and it's just been really nice to be in your space and be in your hearts a little bit. And I notice that when I come on interviews, I'm the default mode that you found me in and that I start in is like, I'm going to explain this stuff. And I like that that's not really where we landed, and that's not where you guys are at. It's nice to just find that, whatever this is.
Yeah.
I'm, for those who can't see, I'm just kind of moving my body back and forth, allowing my heart to guide the movement of my shoulders.
Yeah, Bola Lung, who we mentioned earlier, he often, he watches, and he sent me, we've done 126 shows since COVID started. Like, this show just began with COVID. Yesterday, I was just getting tired. It was like every day, Monday to Friday, we're doing a show a day, every day. And Bola Lung wrote some sweet message yesterday and said, the show will figure out whatever it's meant to be just by doing the show. And I laughingly thought, oh shit, he gets it. Of course he gets it, because that's the way we started. But I was losing a little bit of the excitement, because on one level, I'm here to be present, not to do an hour show. screw the show. Like, that's not about, one of the shows, Bambos and I were literally silent for the show. Show was on silence, so we just looked at the camera for an hour.
The guest didn't show up, so we were trying to figure out what to talk about, and then silence came up.
Yeah, that was the show.
Well, I love that you guys are in service to whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
It's such a message. Yeah, you work in the corporate world more than I do, although I've been starting to. I do corporate work, but not as much and not as successfully as you've done it, I'm gathering.
But you know what? But by the way, David, that's only because I started there. I dropped out and lived like the monk for 10 years so I could go back in and speak the lingo, and they had the trust, because they couldn't just say, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about.
All right.
So I got the street credibility from a former life. And that gave me the opportunity to go back in and speak weird languaging potentially. But the fact that you'd done that other thing means you can't be all that crazy. And I think that projection and people's sort of idea of who you are and what they can expect from you defines a lot of where you find yourself in the world. So
that's well said.
I do like to qualify things, because a lot of times, like when someone says, I would love to be doing the thing that you're doing. And then I'm like, yeah. And I might even say, I'd love to be doing the thing of sitting with 30 groups, but in my DNA, that isn't what I was built for. So for me to try to be doing that would be going against what comes naturally, which isn't a problem, but it's embracing that this is where my predisposition takes me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In a weird way, I don't see people as special. I just see people as doing special things. They allow themselves to manifest potentially in whatever like form that really, like I always call it like a wavelength. Like, the stronger your wavelength, the easier it is for people to understand who you are and what you're all about. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that connection, then your wavelength isn't really clear. So people can't really quite make out who are you and what are you doing and that kind of thing. Yeah. So your wavelength.
I learned a lot from that. What you just said, that was great. Mm-hmm. And I want to go back to the point, which is that when I do go into corporations, And I have. I did some corporate work for the Four Seasons, the hotel chain, around empathy. And I did consulting for Coca-Cola around how to integrate empathy into their marketing. So I've been playing a little bit in that world. The thing that I wish I could communicate in a way that it will land, and I can only communicate it, but it doesn't land, it just bounces off a wall, is that for the love of God and all that is sacred on this planet, it is not about the money. And it is not about succeeding. And it is not about getting the project done. And if we're always in that framework, we will never get where we need to go. We have to break that framework.
I would never say that to a client, but I'd always think it.
Yeah.
So if we want to work on your your marketing, I can probably give you a blurb that I think would be appealing to a business. I can give it to you right now, I think.
Okay, I'll take notes.
You will record this. So okay. David, is it Sauvage?
Sauvage.
David Sauvage has the capability of transposing the emotions of your clients into tangible things that you can feel inside of your company so that you become more thoughtful around how you do your marketing, how you do your client engagement, and how you do your customer relationship management.
Oh my God. Whatever. Brilliant.
And so it would be, the focus for me would always be on what does the talent that you have translate into a tangible thing that a company would say, yeah, we need that. And the further away it comes into a belief system of what you think they should, like what you said was, Andy, I think they should know this. And of course you wouldn't say that to them, obviously, But the thing is to translate it into the natural consequence of you doing the things we just discussed would be that they would be more in tune with what the client needs. But they can only do that if they understand the client, and you understand the client best if you have an empathetic capacity that doesn't yet exist in your corporation. And that's the missing link that I can give you that you don't have yet.
I think that if I can integrate that, I will become very successful. That was really good.
While
I have Andy the consultant on, can I ask one consulting-y question?
Of course.
The work that I have been drawn to in the corporate world is executive conflict resolution.
Okay.
I don't know how to something I've been excited about.
The hardest thing is I don't think anyone would ever look for executive conflict. No one has ever hired me for executive conflict, but I deal with it all the time. Mm-hmm. So I would never position myself that way if I were you. I would position myself as I am capable of helping a leader who usually has a strong personality to deal with adverse situations in ways that they are not capable of at this moment.
Oh, so good.
So I will make them more effective in what they want to achieve, but in ways that they're maybe not accustomed to because they haven't attuned that part of their thinking or their being. So you're going to add a skill set to somebody who's already high functioning, and in some ways you'll be an interface between them and the people that they're probably having challenges with on both in both directions. So not only for the director, but for the people who can't necessarily connect with the director in a way that he can process whatever the messages they have for him. You're the interface.
You're so good at this game. Thank you.
You said game. I almost heard the word scam.
No, it's not a scam because your intention is right. You do really want to align people with their hearts.
Yeah.
So it's not a scam. It's it's what in Buddhism is called an expedient means. Hmm. There's a Buddhist parable. Do you got a minute for my favorite parable and why what you're doing isn't a scam?
Yes. Yeah.
It's called the parable of the burning house. Hmm. And there's a house and it's on fire. And there's all these kids in the house playing with toys, and they don't realize that the house is on fire. And an old man sees the house on fire and sees the kids in the house playing with toys, risking their lives. But he's not strong enough to go in and pull them out. And he knows just saying, you have to get out, they're not going to listen. So he thinks, what do I do? And he comes up with an idea, and he says, hey, kids, I know you guys are playing with games in there, but I have even better games outside. All these super cool games. You won't even believe it. And the kids come running out of the house and they say, where are our games? And he says, oh yeah, no games, sorry. But I have, instead of games, I have this chariot with these beautiful horses. And why don't you get in and go wherever the horses will take you? And the kids get in the chariot and go off. So the Buddha will say whatever the Buddha needs to say to get the kids out of the burning house. He'll speak their language and play their games because they need to get out. And then once they're out, they'll see that the house was on fire and that they need to go wherever God wants to take them.
Mm. Yeah.
So that was that was the sense in which I used the word game.
Yeah. Oh, and it is a game, by the way. No offense would be taken. Even if you said scam, I would have actually been okay with that as well, honestly. I think the thing in is, and I think that's its own show, is it often goes back to intention. Like we talked about, we do a lot of shows on truth. And you said, Andy, you know, earlier in the show, I made a general statement and you said, you need to put an asterisk there. Like I was really true for me when I said I put an asterisk at the end of any sentence I make because it's always contextually true. So on one level, I'm speaking knowing that what I'm saying is also could be falsified, but we need to start somewhere and we'll learn through our interaction what makes sense and what doesn't make sense, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. When I find myself in spaces where there are people at various levels of emotional development and I want to just kind of tune into them and then tune into them, I'll often find myself contradicting myself within 5 minutes.
Of course.
And it's good for me just to come back to the idea that a belief is not something right or wrong ever. Like a belief is just what we need to hold on to get to the next place in our lives. So here's a belief that will help you. Here's a belief that will help you. And for me, I need to hold all these beliefs to help myself. And there is no true belief. And even that's just a belief that I'm holding to like get me through the day.
Yeah, that's when a lot we talk about is the paradoxes and being able to hold two contrary points and not get stuck in either one is like the height of creativity. We did a show with Bob Deutsch, which was, that was the main theme there as well. We've gone way over our hour. Okay. So great. So, all right.
Well, thank you for having me on. This was a pleasure.
Thank you. Yeah, it was great being with you.
Thank you.
It's a wonderful chaos. We like it that way.